Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Standardizing and Automating Central Lab Testing Across 25 Laboratory Sites to Shorten Time to Answer, Reduce Staff Touches, and Improve Service to Physicians. The presenters are Daniel Anderson, Clinical Pathology Lab Manager, Intermountain Health, Murray, Utah, and Jamal Juma, President and CEO, JTG Consulting Group, Miami Shores, Florida.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the EWC session. We're going to presenting the presentation. Daniel Anderson, who's the Clinical Pathology Lab Manager at the Intermountain Health, Murray, and Mr.
Jamal Juma.
That's good.
We're off to a good start. I can say my own name.
He said it a lot better than I would have. Anyway, he's the president and CEO of JTG Consulting Group out of Miami Shores, Florida. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this presentation. We'd like to thank the Executive War Colleges for allowing us, inviting us to come speak. So today we're going to talk about standardizing and automating chemistry lab testing across 25 different sites. Our goals were to shorten time to answer, reduce staff touches, and improve service to physicians. So just a little overview of our presentation. We'll do some quick introductions, a little bit of background about the situation that we were in. We're going to talk about decisions and goals. We're going to spend quite a bit of time on implementation, how we did it, lessons learned, and all of that. And we will be reviewing some metrics, and lessons learned and next steps. So for introduction, so like I was presented, my name's Dan Anderson. I'm the clinical lab pathology manager at the central lab for Intermountain Health. So I have about 20 years of experience managing different size laboratories in different settings. One of my mottos is quality first. I truly believe if you don't embed quality early on in your process, things will eventually crumble. So you'll see throughout this presentation that we're really focused on quality and making sure that we get it right the first time. If I had to pick a superhero to, I guess, represent me or embody me, it would be speed, agility, and empathy from Flash. So, and just for full disclosure, I have no conflicts of interest other than being an employee of Intermountain Health.
Thanks, Dan. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jamal Juma. I'm the president and CEO at JTG Consulting Group. I have been in the lab IT space for over 18 years and focus on interoperability, improving solutions for customers, laboratorians, patients. I've been deemed the lab IT ninja from Dr. David Reese from UHealth and spent a lot of time in the lab. And if I was to choose, my superhero would be Leonardo. And that's because I'm the leader of our company, and I have to be fearless and very mature, focused, and help drive our company forward. So, pleasure to be here with you guys today. All right, so I'll hand it back to Dan for the background on Intermountain.
So, just a little bit of background about Intermountain. So, we do cover seven different states. We're the largest nonprofit health system in Intermountain West. The mission of Intermountain Health is to improve the health of the community. It's not necessarily to gain revenue or bring in business, it's actually to improve health. So a lot of the stuff that we do is actually to help patients actually not come to the hospital, which I know many health systems are shifting to that mindset, but Intermountain Health is an amazing example of how to do that. However, Intermountain is really focused, not really focused, but really central to Utah. That's where it started. So there's 20 different hospitals across Utah. You can see, here's a map of Utah. If you've been, you kind of know that most of the population is up in the kind of the middle, where Salt Lake City and Utah Valley. You can see quite a bit of hospitals in there. We have our largest hospitals, Intermountain Medical Center. Sometimes I'll refer to it today as the Central Lab. That's a 500 plus bed hospital. It's also kind of a mini reference lab for the other Intermountain sites to send there. And so that is our largest hospital. We do have hospitals that range from 16 bed on up. And so, I'm gonna go to the next slide. One of the unique things about this health system is because it is so broad, we have mobile phlebotomy units, we have rural hospitals, and we have these major large core laboratories that we have. One of the structures, I guess, that's helped this implementation was we have a standardized system. So Intermountain Health, a lot of other facilities may have a lab manager, a lab director, and they report up through hospital administration. Intermountain, we have a shared service. So what that means is all of the managers and directors report up to a VP of all of Intermountain. So we have dotted lines to hospital administration, but we don't have to go get approval from hospital administration for capital and other items. And this actually set us up for success with this. We also, because we have many different hospitals, we have a fulfillment center, we have an on-site supply storage, so that we don't have to have each hospital system act like an island and get the reagents and consumables and have to store all of them. Okay, so I'm gonna start kind of way back, several years ago. We found ourselves, like everybody in this room knows, that you have contracts that come to an end. We found ourselves at the, approaching the end of a contract. The instruments were starting to age, as laboratory instruments do. So we decided, do we want to stay where we are, or are we open to some change? So we evaluated internally what's our, where we are and what we want to be. So we really wanted to look at patient care. Is there better testing? Is there newer technology out there? And obviously, there's always, you need to look at the financial aspect of where we are and where we want to be. So some of the decisions that we made, we said, well, we want to look at all the major players of new chemistry analyzers. And so we wanted to evaluate them for the clinical aspect, for workflow, and also, like I mentioned, financial. Now, remember when I said that our decision was going to be made at a system level? When I talk about that, we weren't going to allow each hospital system to choose their favorite, like if they wanted to go with vendor A or vendor B or vendor C. We decided we are all going to move towards the same system. So that was at the system level.
Yeah, and one other consideration that Intermountain and the team had to come up with was deciding on middleware. With the new Roche Cobas, they were implementing Infinity. They had the legacy Abbott instrument manager provided by Data Innovations, which still exists today, and we'll get a little bit more into that. So we needed to look at the capabilities, plus there's a four-letter word, Epic, in their future as well that we'll talk about in a little bit.
So, as any project, we wanted to define goals, and so we wanted to look at the clinical needs. So turnaround time is obviously very important to any laboratory testing. We wanted to see if there's a new platform that we could offer additional testing to. And we wanted to minimize disruption. And so those were some of our three top goals for the clinical aspect. But we also wanted to look at workflow. So workflow is super important. All the lab managers and directors in this room know that lab technologists are not just crawling around, you can pick anyone you want. It's very tight to grab good technologists, and so we wanted to reduce the hands-on time.
All right, so getting a little bit into the implementation. There were multiple communities involved, and it was based off of regions and locations. This was just a graphic just to illustrate that obviously these did not run in series, they're running in parallel, and there's still more to go. And if we kind of deep dive a little bit into each community, this kind of gives you an idea of all of the steps that were involved, including hardware delivery, the installation, sometimes construction. There was a lot of things going on at these different sites, specifically at the central lab as well. Of course, getting the technologist and everyone involved in the laboratory on training, as well as the IT folks. Wet testing was a big one, and I'll let Dan talk about that because that was a very large part of this testing.
Yeah, so wet testing is, sometimes people call it end-to-end testing. So you literally get your sample that's actually a sample, put a label on it, and run it through the system. So from beginning to end, make sure every point of contact is working, all the rules are working appropriately. But the hard thing is you have to kind of find or make up samples that will cause an error. So you want to cause a critical high, critical low, all of that. And that wet testing, don't underestimate that takes a long time. So one of the things on the community is just for, any other systems out there, The reason why we chose a community approach was because they're geographically close to each other, because a lot of the physicians will practice at multiple hospitals. So that's why we chose that. We didn't want to go live with one hospital and then the other ones, you know, the other physician had to go between those hospitals. It actually helped quite a bit. The reason, so there's in a community, there's 2 to 3, sometimes 4 in a community. And it really helped those labs move a little bit together or synchronize. And you didn't have some labs that were lagging, saying, oh, we're short-staffed, we can't do it. It's like, no, as a community, we're moving forward. And we would move resources around.
And then, of course, post-go-live, go-live and post-go-live optimization. So it's critical that while you're in a go-live mode and still with support from your vendors, to make sure that you take advantage of that opportunity where you're not having to call in a support case for every little thing. You can work with your vendors, LIS, IT, the EHR even, to make the optimizations that are necessary. So definitely something that we learned very quickly on was beneficial, and we continue to utilize that post-go live optimization mode.
So let's talk about implementation. So any big project, I really boil it down to 3 different things that you need to focus on. There's people, processes, and parts. And so we're going to talk about each one of these in more detail. So let's start with people. So with change, you're always going to have your early adopters, your naysayers, and your champions. What I suggest, or what we did, was actually look for your champions. So I call them, sometimes I call them untitled leaders, and you really look to find them to see who they are, and you support them. You need to support, give them what they need, give their education, give them training, all of that, so that they can become your champions and help, sway the naysayers back to your side. Learning and training. So we did standardized training across, so everybody got the same training. We also got training from our vendor, but also we did it internally as well. One thing that, with people, as laboratorians, we're really used to looking at instruments and saying, okay, here's what it should be performing at, this is what's going to happen. And with people, it's not always the same. So understand that training is going to go at different rates for different people is key. Don't get frustrated if you have somebody that's taking a little bit longer. Train them well. Remember, quality first. Train them well so that when it goes live, you'll have a lot smoother process. And the other part is, you can train as much as you want, but when you go live, it's not going to be smooth. There's always things that you can't train for or you're not going to foresee. And so just be patient with your people.
And this is just an example of during the Central Lab go live, there was an issues list. There were so many things going on, so many people involved. Vendors were on site. Additional staff was brought in to support the go live and ensure a smooth go live. We found very quickly that communicating effectively as a group was important while we were all at the Central Lab. So having these sticky notes and post-it notes with just a running list made sure that things were being taken care of quickly and handed off from shift to shift without people having to look at emails and see what was communicated through their ticketing systems, et cetera.
So most of you may be familiar with the Plan, Do, Study, Act or the Deming cycle. So that we did use this where, obviously there's a lot of planning, doing, setting, and acting. But if you look at this, there's 2 different cycles going on. So every rule that we do, that we created, we would plan for it. We'd say, okay, if X and Y happen, then Z must take place. Then we would do it or test it, make sure it worked, and then we would act if it needs to be tweaked. So we would do that cycle. But we also did this cycle for each community. So for when community 1 went live, we did a lot of planning, we did it, we studied it and learned from it, and then we acted on it. Community 2 got a little bit better, community 3 got better, and we're getting better and better about doing this. So don't overestimate the simplicity of the Plan, Do, Study, Act. I think you may do it without realizing it, but it's something that, it's a cycle that keeps going and going. So we talked about people, we're going to talk about processes, both inside the lab and outside. So obviously there's a heavy amount of validation. I don't have to tell anybody in this room how much validation we did. But something that's sometimes often overlooked as well is making your area lean. So when you're switching out vendors to a new system or instruments, things get disrupted, and technologists that maybe have been working on those instruments for 10 or 20 years are very used to how things are and where things are located. When you switch out to a new area or new analyzers, you're gonna have new systems. You're gonna have different places where you need to put stuff. And so when we go live, we'll make sure that we have all of our areas worked up in a lean process as we can. Procedures, we have a lot of, remember when I talked about standard works, the nice thing about Intermountain and the system that we have set up is that we can have one procedure that will cover all of our hospitals. It's a standardized global procedure. So that helps, so we don't have to have, you know, 20 plus procedures in there. Keeping those all accurate and in sync would be a logistical nightmare, but having that standardized procedure really saved us. So outside the lab, so when, you know, laboratory medicine does impact the hospitals quite a bit. Everybody knows that. So a couple things to advise, I guess, is to engage quality, your education, your lab directors early and often. Don't bring them in midstream or towards the end and say, okay, we're doing this. Can you sign off on this? They should be early in the decision, but also however involved they need to be, they should know everything, every parts of this of the process. And also, you know, as the testing goes back to the patients and the physicians, those people are impacted more than you think. So we needed to engage the ED, NICU, and infusion, kind of the three areas that their timing of the results are probably the most critical. We did a lot of documentation about the specimen collections, if anything was changing, and also result interpretation. So we posted these are just three examples of the information that we put out. We probably quadruple covered physicians. I'm not kidding, on the day that we go live, we get calls from physicians saying, wait, what's going on? What happened? And we're like, we told you that it's what was going on. And so what we did is we actually kind of did a fact sheet on our test directory and pointed them back to that. And so that was helpful so that we had to re-explain. It was all there in a concise information. Change control is something, you know, it's basic project management. We're not going to go too much detail here, but just realize, you know, if you're not having your mini timelines, your sub timelines, the project's probably going to get delayed. So people always focus on the, when are we going to go live? And that's what, you know, executives want to hear, but they're not focusing on the mini go lives that potentially push back. So we did have to push back our community one a couple weeks, but since then we've been on time for all our other communities.
Yeah, and another piece was the IT change control layer as well. So very critical part of this. You've got, you know, QA ranges, reference ranges, things that needed to be updated in systems, new order codes that were coming in. Those were highly coordinated across teams from the EMR to the LIS and, of course, within the lab. So that was definitely something that was very critical to the success of this project. Again, you know, from an IT perspective, you know, obviously essential to success here. Without the IT pieces, none of this would work, especially with the volume that is seen at Intermountain. So had to set clear expectations and requests, ensuring that we were talking the same language. And I'm talking to the point of, we're talking inbound of the LIS and outbound to the middleware, right? You need to be very specific when you're communicating. That way there's no confusion or room for ambiguity. Again, coordinating between the lab IT and the vendor IT, so making sure that the vendor is available, whether it be the middleware provider, the instrument provider, ensuring that all the teams are coordinated and moving in the right direction. We had frequent meetings, and by frequent, I mean very, very often, multiple times per day. Those proved to be very successful. We wanted to make sure also that those working sessions were separated from status meetings. You can never get anything done when there's 30 people on a call, let's be real. So separating those working sessions, different work groups versus your weekly status meetings and steering committee meetings as well was very important. Validation of LIS rules. Again, the EPIC was in the future, so we had to look and see, do we keep these rules and calculations in the LIS? Do we move them to the middleware? Are we going to put them in EPIC Beaker in the future? So there was a lot of considerations and back and forth to decide that. some things that are need lookbacks, right, for certain types of results made more sense to keep into the LIS since there was not a lot of results in the new middleware product. So really the goal here is to eliminate a lot of back and forth and set clear expectations. Just to kind of give you guys a super high level, this is from Roche. This is their system architecture overview for the Infinity and the Cobos line. Everything above this line here, let's see if I can get this. Oh, I just blacked it out. Well, we won't use that. Everything from up here is within the customer's network. So you've got the servers. Obviously, they offer single sign-on for Active Directory. And then you've got the Infinity that's really the brains behind the middleware here for controlling the analyzers and communicating with the host systems. Everything below the cloud here allows Roche to connect to their systems and be able to provide remote support from a technical perspective, check on things, and not necessarily have to be on site. So from a current, this is a very simplified version graphic. Currently, Intermountain is on Clinisys, also known as Sunquest Laboratory Information System. And Cobos Infinity was put in here as the brains of the operation to control the line, to control all the analyzers at all the different communities. And this really, you know, again, we had to start to think about how do we go through the implementation with the rules and calculations. So our good friend William Shakespeare, to calc or not to calc, that is the question. We had to do a deep dive evaluation. There were a lot of legacy calculations as well that the team were not as familiar with because tribal knowledge, you know, had retired over the pandemic and other times. And looking at the benefits and versus capabilities. So really trying to understand if we keep this in the LIS or if we move this into the middleware, where are the benefits afforded for the entire system, especially with the future of Epic coming down the road. So we wanted to make sure we were proofing, future-proofing and planning for the Epic Beaker transition so there was less rework. The Epic project is slated to go live in September of 2025, which is a very aggressive timeline for Intermountain and really any site this large. So we wanted to make sure that we could eliminate as much rework and be as efficient as possible. So looking at the future state, here you can see now we've got Epic Beaker in the mix, and we also have Data Innovations in the mix. So Data Innovations will sit in between Infinity and Epic Beaker as the main connectivity solution. This also, again, very simplified version of this graphic. There's over 300 other analyzers that will be connecting directly to Data Innovations Instrument Manager. But ultimately, the Cobos Infinity will connect to DI in a connection that is a pass-through, essentially. But we're still looking at some of these rules and calcs. Would they be better to be moved into DI versus letting them stay in Infinity? There are some things that in Infinity we've requested some enhancements that just really need some work. And so we're hoping that those can be completed. But our worst case, best case would be move them into DI or into Beaker.
So we've talked about people, we've talked about processes. So the last part is parts for the implementation. So looking at instruments in your facilities. So obviously contracting is super important. You're going to live with that contract for 7, 8, maybe 10 years. So make sure it's right. Make sure it is what you need. Reagents and consumables. So there's a bit, always a focus on the, you know, capital purchase, but make sure you're looking at your reagents and consumables, not only for the pricing, but also for your stocking before you go live. Realizing that you're gonna have a lot of training, you're gonna have a lot of validation work, and then you're gonna go live and things, you're probably gonna consume a little bit more than you would on a typical day. So make sure you have enough inventory on hand before, you know, when you're actually going live. That's something that's one of our lessons learned, that there's been some sites that haven't had as much. Luckily, as a network, we're able to help each other out if somebody's missing a reagent or consumable, we can get it to them within a couple hours. Construction facilities, again, you know, people in the lab think, oh, we have the approval to get this instrument, and it's coming, and it's going to get delivered this day, and then you call up your facilities and say, hey, I need this power, or I need water or drains or whatever. And they say, okay, get on the list, and we'll see you in 6 months. So make sure when you're when you're starting your process that you engage construction facilities so you know exactly what you need, where you need it, so there's no delays and backup from that. Obviously, validations understand what the vendor's going to do and what you're going to do, so there's no miscommunication towards the end of the project. It's like, oh, I thought you were going to do this part. It's like, no, that's a customer side or that's a vendor side. So those are some of the things just for the parts. Again, parts are, I think, a lot easier to manage than people or processes, but it's something that you really can't overlook as well.
A new introduction to the automation was the Tempest 600 system. This is the first in North America to go live, and it's a really exciting system, and we'll kind of explain here. So the Tempest connects directly to the BLIM, which is the bulk loader input module. I always get it wrong. And what's pretty amazing is they're collecting specimens in the ED and other areas of the hospital that are instrument-ready barcodes. So they're able to drop it into the pneumatic tube system, and it goes directly into the BLIM, which then the automation line can pick up. So this was it obviously removes a touch point, less specimen processing time, and ultimately improves the turnaround time. So we have a little video real quick. Just to kind of give you guys an overview of it. Let's see, the PowerPoint was not cooperating, so bear with us. Okay, so this is just kind of a super high level overview. Obviously, you gotta bleed the patient. Positive patient ID. Has anyone seen this before?
So before we got the Tempest, and we still actually have it, we have a pneumatic tube system, which many hospitals do, but that's kind of a point-to-point. It gets dropped off and somebody has to open it and touch the specimen. Where this, like Jamel was mentioning, it actually drops into the bulk loader. So there is zero, if it works, meaning there's no issues with the sample, then there'll be zero touching of processing or the lab. In this part, they show them grabbing it, but in a second, it'll show it loading right onto the instrument.
It's pretty cool too because you can actually dump a whole bucket of tubes in there as well, not just for the Tempest. So that's a little overview of that. Let me switch it back. Okay. Oh, that was the video that did not work. Okay. And there we go. Okay. So there were some technical considerations to ensure that those labels, I think the audio is still playing. To ensure that those specimens could come onto the automation automatically. So in Sunquest, or now Clinisys, there's a spot specimen point of tracking hierarchy. You can see here they have all the different pieces on the automation line. And so we needed to make sure that when those specimens came, there was already a download to Infinity. So when the specimen was queried by the analyzer, it would know what to do. We had to work with Roche to make this work and the integration. On the Sunquest side, we wrote some custom hooks and code to make that happen. But essentially, we wanted to be able to disband batches that were dumped into the BLIM or have specimens that came directly through the Tempest, through the BLIM, to be able to be auto-received. So there's automatic sample scene messages as soon as the specimens are received by the analyzer. And then there was the spot maintenance that was required to be updated here. Additionally, so this is a screenshot from Infinity. You can see here some of the instrument position, those last two columns, where within Infinity there's tracking of the rack and position. We wanted to enhance that and bring that into Sunquest as well because not everyone's using Infinity, whether in specimen processing or other parts of the lab like exception handling. So again, we wrote some custom code to get that information to come across. So this is a screenshot of Sunquest, where you can see every spot that it hit on the automation line, as well as once it was put into storage in the P701, the rack and slot information. So not everyone needed to be in Infinity. They could also see this from audit tracking capabilities as well within SunQuest. Okay.
So let's talk about metrics for a minute. So obviously turnaround time is super important to not only labs, but the patient, the physicians as well. So when we go live, we'd look at these daily. We'd look at even down to the shift, so morning, afternoon, and night. We looked at the high impact tests, so troponins and other high impact tests. We would look at those individually. So, and also by order units, so ED is really important, NICU and ICU and infusion. So what I want, this is an actual graph of our go live. It's very obvious when we went live, our turnaround time jumped up quite a bit on that date. But what I want to point out is you'll see these subsequent peaks after that. So you'll do some improvement and you'll think you're there, and then all of a sudden you have a setback. So as lab managers and directors, don't get frustrated that you're taking a step back. If you take a step back and look at the overall trend, you'll actually see improving over time. What's causing these little peaks to go up are typically errors or instances where the technologists aren't used to know how to solve those. On their old system, they knew how to solve it, but their new system, they're like, wait, what do I do? I don't know what to do. They may have to call into the vendor, they may have to talk to the supervisor or an experienced technologist. But you can see over time, you'll actually improve your overall turnaround time. So hands-on time, so we talked about the Tempus system. This is a graph. The first couple months are actual, and then it moves on to what we're predicting that will happen. So the blue line or bar graphs are the P-tube or the pneumatic tube system. So historically, they would come in, they'd get dropped to the lab. Somebody would have to go physically grab them, open them, take this label or take the specimen out, make sure the orders are there, label it, and then go put it on the thing. So that's about 2 to 3 minutes per specimen. Now with the Tempus system, it's completely hands off, unless there's sample short or there's some error with the labeling, but it's pretty much hands off for the lab on that. So you can see that the gray line is our labor for our P-tube system. So we are about 500 to 600 minutes a month. Now we're dropping down to about 80 to 90 because we still have some specimens that are coming through that can't go through the Tempus system.
Yeah. And one other thing was touch points and hold time. So looking at auto verification rules and things that we could do to help speed up the release of results to the patient's chart. Again, these are all things that we're ongoing and continually looking at, including with the Epic Beaker implementation.
And wait, for the, you know, to reducing hand touches as well, add-ons would be able to be added on without the technologist having to go pull it. It would be pulled out of the storage module and ran on the instrument. So it really is, we're trying to reduce those touch points, those hands-on, because we know that there's always some lag and they're always doing something else. And so if we can eliminate that, then the results, especially for add-ons, get to happen a lot quicker. So expenses, so again, we talked about like the capital upfront purchases, but there's also the kind of the ongoing. Our first community went live about 6 months ago, and then we've been watching the financials. So every CFO is wanting to find their ROI and looking at your monthly statements, but you need to remind them it's going to take quite a bit of time, up to 6 months, to fully understand what the impact is, and hopefully it's a positive impact. But you'll see that you'll have, what happens on month 1 and 2, you'll have a lot of training reagents in there, you'll have a lot of validation stuff still in there. And so those reagents are a little bit higher. And then also your old reagents that you may have to write off, those expenses are there. So in about 4, 5 to 6 months is when all of that stuff is maybe settled out and you're able to see it. I wasn't able to put in the PowerPoint, but we just looked at the 6 month and it does look like we've flipped and we're actually positive on that. Supply management, again, you know, switching vendor to vendor, make sure you understand what the vendor's expectations are, how they will deliver your samples, when they will deliver it, if it's an overnight, if there's, you know, special free shipping days that you can bulk purchase, and understand all of that before, you know, you're kind of in the water, so.
All right, everyone's favorite, lessons learned.
You want to start?
Okay,
so what we did well, so I can't stress enough about the standardizing and making the decision once. So we literally said, we're gonna move to this vendor, and everybody had to move. There was no choices, there's no, I'm gonna opt out. It's like, no, everybody's gonna move to this new instrumentation, and the ball started rolling. We didn't have to convince, you know, 25 different hospital administrations for the money and 25 different facility groups to make sure that we get on their schedule. We said, this is a system decision, and we move forward. So that's something that we really did well. I did like the community approach. There's different approaches. You can do, you know, rip the Band-Aid off and say, okay, all 25 sites are going live on the same date, or we could have done one by one, but I really feel like the community actually helped. Each of the lab managers have somebody else to talk to, like the different lab managers in the community too would say, okay, how are you doing? What are you struggling with this? Yeah, I'm struggling with this. Okay, let's figure this out together. Let's engage the vendor. That community approach is actually, I feel like, very successful with that.
Yeah, the community, I agree 100%, because there were people from different communities that were able to come over to other communities to help and bring their knowledge and experience as well. So that part, super successful. Setting up for a future with Epic Beaker, I cannot beat that dead horse enough, and I've stopped after this. Teamwork and partnership, obviously there was a lot of teams involved. You know, you had the lab, you had QA, you have IT, you have the vendor IT, you have security, you have everyone, supply management, finance. The teamwork and partnership across the organization was incredible, including, of course, the vendors that were involved. So,
yeah, so one of the, you know, we were working like 16, 18-hour days, you know, go live before and as during go live, and the vendor was there, and two people made the comment in different times to me, and they said, we're amazed at the teamwork that you all have. So we've been in a lot of go lives and it gets stressful and fingers start to get pointed and people start getting kind of thrown under the bus, but they said, we have not seen that once here. And I was really impressed. I didn't really realize that until they kind of pointed out kind of what a teamwork atmosphere that we did have. Some improvements that we would like to highlight that maybe, you know, for those that are embarking on this or thinking about embarking on this is, like I mentioned earlier, involve your QA support earlier. Make sure they're in it from the beginning and at every stage along the ways. And then also communication to providers. I did mention that we quadruple covered. I don't know how else we could have covered more, but we got a lot of phone calls on Go Live Day asking what the change is, and we had to, you know, point them to the communication that we already provided, but just realize, just because you mention it in an email, they're not gonna retain that. Just because you go to their department staff meeting doesn't mean they're gonna necessarily retain that.
Yeah, and on the teamwork side, to Dan's point, I've never seen a team that's worked so hard and well together just within the lab. They were all very positive. It was a very stressful situation. They got to celebrate the successes together. This was around 10 till 1 in the morning. They had all worked 16 to 18 hours, and as you can see, everyone was in good spirits. Everyone's still smiling, so it was really good to enjoy the time together. Here's some a nice picture of us, and so we've got specimen processing very heavily involved, and then Alicia Simon, the lab director for Central Lab as well. All right, next steps.
So we're about halfway through our communities. We actually have three more hospitals going live next week, and so that's exciting. Like I mentioned, every single community that's going live has gone smoother and smoother. And one of the things that we've done different or added to this is we've actually taken the lab managers and supervisors of communities that have gone live, and they're actually physically on site with those communities that are going live that day. And that's helping not only actually doing the work, you know, putting on gloves and a lab coat to run the samples and help them through it, but it's also helping them just kind of calm their nerves, saying, okay, this is what you do, here's the validation, here's next step. So that's really, you know, our next step is to get all the communities live. It'll take us until about early September, or sorry, early 2025. So we have about a little less than a year until all communities are live. Continuous improvement. So we don't, when I talk about the plan, do, study, act cycle, just because we're live doesn't mean we're done. We're continually improving. We've had the vendor come back. We've worked with JTG about how we can improve our process and how we can get our turnaround time better and better and better, and how we can get our rules and workflows better and better and better. And so that's, you know, that's our next step. That's ongoing heavily now, but you know, you can never stop improving with this.
Yep, and again, you know, we're looking at ways to continue to optimize integration capabilities, and that will be partnerships with Roche and Data Innovations and Epic and the team. We have weekly calls with them to talk about, hey, this isn't working exactly the way we've seen it work before. Where can we tweak things and really take that opportunity to improve the integration? And I said I wasn't going to talk about it, so I'm not going to talk about that last bullet. But that is definitely something that we're working on and heavily embarked already. So with that, that gives us 10 minutes for any questions. If you want, you can also scan this QR code. It'll get you in touch with Dan and I directly. And any questions for you guys, from you guys? If not, repeat the question. Yes, okay. Okay.
So really impressive. Love what you've done, obviously on the medium. We've gone through a lot of these projects as well, and what you've done is textbook. What thought are you now giving to your contingency plan? Because one of the big challenges you have with one vendor, if they have a warehouse problem or they run out of reagent, what they tend to like to do is give you money, but it doesn't get the samples run. So what contingency planning have you got across the system? And is that in your work plan at the moment, looking at different scenarios? So if there is a power outage at one, you've got a very slick process to move between, or if there is a reagent shortage, you know how you can cope across the system.
Yeah, so the question was, what's our contingency plan, you know, if we're all moving to the same vendor, and if there's a vendor reagent shortage or, you know, power outage or whatever. So we have, you know, 25 different sites that are going to be live with this. And we work as a community, as a system. And so if there's a power outage or something happening at one hospital, we have couriers multiple times a day, you know, almost hourly in some instances, that we could shift the work to a different laboratory. Now, if it's an entire system, meaning like all the reagents are out from the vendor, we would then engage a reference laboratory to be able to take on that work.
You said in the first or second slide about post go live optimization, and is that just about rules and process, or have you looked at, you know, low leveling or test utilization in terms of, you know, where the test should actually be performed instead of just having everyone submit?
Yeah, so the question was, you know, we had a post go live optimization. Did that include load leveling, or does that just include like rules and calculations? The simple answer is all of it. So we've looked at rules and calculations fairly heavily, because even if you move samples from one lab to another, and if the lab's not optimized, it doesn't really help. So we're doing that as well. We're actually looking at, you know, which areas sort of geographically should be doing the testing and what tests they should be doing, and should we send stuff to the central lab? Central lab's the largest. It has better economies of scale there. Yeah, so the easy part is you can look at it financially and turnaround time. The hard part is when the physicians get involved and say, no, I want it here. And so we can make that decision, or so we can do the analysis fairly easy and say, it makes sense to send it or it makes sense to stay. But sometimes physicians will step in and say, no, I need it here, you know, for those three patients that they're treating once a month type of a thing. And sometimes you have to go with that, so.
That never happens.
Head, yeah.
At what point in that, in the Tempus, or the whatever, is the specification?
Before. And so the phlebotomist and the ED we'll label it and then put it on. So, yeah, go ahead.
Just to pick up on your comment about managing expectations, can you repeat or describe again how you manage the governance for all of these different sites to become aligned and to kind of move things forward and have standardization in that way? And then two, a separate question, can you talk about drone delivery and how that might fit into this?
Yeah, well, first to your first question about governance and how we kept everybody standardized. So we have work groups, and so these work groups have representation from the different communities, and then they so that's how we make sure everything's standardized. So we're not able to have a site say, well, I want to do this different rule, or I want to do this different process. It's like, no, this is a standardized process, so you have to go to the chemistry work group, that's what we call it, and or best practice group, and then they'll decide, should we move towards this in a new way as a system, or do we stay where we are? And they're actually pretty good. It's not an overarching group that says no to everything. They're actually really innovative and say, okay, this is actually a good idea. Let's look at this and say, maybe this does make sense to go across the board. So did that answer your first question?
Yeah.
Okay. And your second question about drone, we haven't really just looked into that much for this project. I'd have to consult with our courier services and see what they're looking at. But geographically, like Utah is pretty easy access to all the different hospitals. We have couriers and runners kind of going around. Once we get into the Wyoming, Colorado, you know, there are some distance between those. So,
just a quick comment on the drones. There's some very good case studies in Canada you may want to look at.
Okay.
Because there's real issues about line of sight. And also the fact that a drone can get very hot or very cold and disrupt the samples.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of information out there, and it's not as straightforward as you think. We've looked at them in London, and it's impossible, mainly due to the fact you've got air regulations and pathways, and we can only use them down the River Thames, and that's it. So
yeah.
There's a lot to think about.
Yeah. I think it's cool and interesting to evaluate, but there is a lot of things, even agitating, you know, as it's moving, depending on your analyte and stuff. So there has to be quite a bit of validation. Even the Tempest system, the BLIM, we had to validate to make sure just dumping the samples in there doesn't disrupt or, you know, cause a change of results.
With Tempest, what's the failure rate for samples in terms of transport? Does it happen?
It happened early on, but it was a mechanical thing. It wasn't necessarily a system thing.
You don't see any cracking or leaking tubes?
No. And when I say mechanical, an HVAC person put a screw through the thing. So that was the error. So it wasn't really Tempest. So I, yeah.
How could your escalation, because people are always the weakness, misaligned barcodes and fading barcodes. So we use automated booking as well, and our problem tends to be the human interface where the barcode's gone out of alignment or no one's bothered to look at the printer quality for a while. So how did your escalation for that? Obviously it's new, so it won't be an issue, but it will be going forward.
Yeah, so the question was about people labeling and improper labeling. We, you know, as any laboratory, will have a, you know, failure rate. It's actually, the system's actually pretty good about scanning. It doesn't have to be perfectly aligned. It can be twisted a little bit or moved. So it actually doesn't fail quite that often just because of a barcode labeling. The phlebotomist and the ED, where they label on the Tempest system, have been trained. They know how to label it. And to my knowledge, I don't think we've had an issue from them ever, you know, putting it upside down or, you know, putting it the wrong way. So the training actually helped with that.
Dave?
Were you in a situation as you're replacing all the instrumentation throughout the whole system where you had some sites with newer versions of the previous instrumentation, and did you have to make decisions about whether to, you know, write off some of that newer instrument to move everyone at the same time?
They, no, I mean, that, everything was kind of in, towards the end of their contract, so it wasn't that. We've had to extend some contract and service for some areas, but we didn't have to write off stuff because, you know, they just purchased it 2 years ago. Again, they kind of did the same thing years ago where they went to their old vendor and kind of got all new instrumentation, so there wasn't a big write-off. So, Steve?
Dan,
yeah.
So in your communities, you have your core lab, right?
Yep.
Central lab. Then.
Yep.
Are your hospitals rapid response labs? Is that a fair statement or not? Really?
Yeah, they're rapid response, but depending on the size of the community that they're supporting, they can be a very small, kind of more of a stat type lab, or they can be a large core lab. Obviously, St. George, for those that know Utah, is 4 hours away, and there's really not many communities between. So they're kind of the second largest laboratory that we have. We have some children's hospitals in the valley as well that have a decent size volume. So, question?
So how do you manage instrument software updates? Because not all instruments are at the same time.
Yeah, so the question was, how are we tackling the software upgrade timelines and with a kind of a delayed or staggered implementation? So we're all on the same system with Infinity. So as Infinity will update, all of those rules that are for one, you know, communities 1, 2, and 3 will also be, you know, if we switch in community 6, we have to switch 1, 2, and 3. So everybody stays on the same cycle.
Do you have your other areas like hematology, co-ed connected to your lines, and does that blend? Would that feed all of that?
So the question was, are hematology and co-ed connected line? We do at the central lab. So we have some Sysmex and Stagos connected to the line, and the BLIM will feed into that. Or the BLIM feeds the pre-analytical instrument that feeds the Sysmex and Stagos. And so just one little comment on that. So when we were looking at turnaround times, we actually used some of our hematology tests. So it's because we had the Sysmex before and we had it after, it's actually a good measure to say, is it the pre-analytical or the line causing any delays versus the actual chemistry analyzers? So if you compare those two, you can say, yes, it is the pre-automation or it's not the pre-automation. So it was actually a unique approach. Yeah, so the question was, who sits on our chemistry work group? So we have two chemistry work group leads, and they're actually managers, so they're more close to the, you know, to testing. But we have lab directors, we have medical directors on there. And so those decisions, there's not a huge body where we have to convince, you know, 50 different people to do it. There's only about 5 to 6 decision makers, and those are the ones that will influence. But they're really in tune with what's actually going on out there. They're not just kind of sitting in an office. They're actually out there working and saying, this is what will help us. And we have great medical directors that are show the respect and allow them to make those decisions.
Any other questions? All right, well, thank you guys. Have a great rest of the day.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.